Okay, we are recording. My name is Annalise Finney. This is an oral history that's being recorded for the Oral History Summer Schools Education Initiative. Today is March 26th, 2021. I'm in Oakland, California, and I'm meeting Adam Lubinsky for the first time. Adam, will you please introduce yourself and say where you are?
Sure. Adam Lubinsky. I'm very happy to be here. And I am an urban planner that works with school districts. I'm a partner in a firm called WXY Studio. I'm also a father of two children currently in New York City schools. So that seems relevant for this conversation.
All right. So before I turn on the recorder, we were talking about how long it's been since your last interview. And I wonder if you can start by just telling me a little bit about what's happened since we last spoke with you.
Yes. You know, a lot of things and nothing, as many people in COVID, you know. I did get a vaccine 2 days ago. So I'm moving a little bit slower as a result. But that was good news. So I feel like there's a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. But in terms of my children, one of them went back to school 2 days a week. So that was not happening when we last spoke. And she went back to school, probably about a month ago. And that's been great. My other daughter is still doing remote. She's a high school student. It's still been fairly cooped up here in the apartment in Brooklyn. And then in terms of work, I've had some ongoing work with school districts that most of that is sort of like in the kind of starting up mode. But I could, yeah, certainly expand on some of that as we go.
I'm curious to have you expand on that. I'm curious, in particular, one thing I've been wondering about is whether you're seeing kind of a difference in the way that people who are outside of school systems are thinking about schools and people who are inside of school systems are thinking about schools. And if there's a disconnect or if people are on the same page, what's been your experience with that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you say people outside of school districts, you mean people who aren't employed working in them. So they could be parents.
Yes.
That I think has been a sort of a theme in some of these previous conversations. I mean, people within school districts, and I guess I talk to people in sort of different, I'm not speaking with teachers as much. I'm more on the kind of sort of administrative and bureaucratic side, you know, basically like holding systems together. They're definitely, going through some difficult times. And I think on many levels, you know, one is looking at what's happening to their districts themselves. The number of students actually enrolled in schools has gone way down. I would say probably nationally, it's like 3 to 4%. And a lot of funding gets attached to that. So there are a lot of questions about whether that funding will also disappear. I think a lot of places are freezing based on last year's funding. So there's a lot of nervousness about like where all these kids are going. A lot of change happening, like, you know, it's really tough times. So people are changing jobs, like New York City lost its schools chancellor. And there's just been a whole host of changes within like New York City schools. So there's just a lot of churn that comes with really stressful times. So I would say it's been particularly difficult, but I think people outside of school districts not working, they don't see those kind of difficulties, but they have their own difficulties. You know, I mean, definitely their perceptions, you know, I think has been like, can we get kids back into schools? You know, some of it is not directed at the districts themselves, but more at like the governor of New York and things like that, you know, where it's like, oh, we're going to allow people in restaurants and actually we're opening movie theaters and we're not restarting schools, you know. So some of that is more politically directed and not directed at school district people. I think people are pretty understanding of teachers during this time. Like there's been a lot of kindness towards teachers from what I've seen. But yeah, there's, you know, there are definitely some reckonings coming, like because of financial stuff, but also like, you know, I am in conversation with a lot of people in different parts of the country, in Florida and Arizona, where the politics are very different. And I think just this time is like shifting a lot of things where, you know, people are working from home, who are able to work from home, and like our whole notion of like options and choice for some people is greater. And there's a lot of stuff in the educational world that's gaining steam. Like there was a bill in Florida that where they've been very pro school choice. Do you know what school voucher programs are? Where
I do, but I would love for you to explain it for somebody listening down the line.
Yeah, well, there's like, yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but there's a bill that looks to take vouchers, which allows a parent to send their child to private school or to religious school, and it will cover a certain amount or all of, you know, that amount based on what their cost is to go to a public school. So say it costs $20,000 to educate a child, they'll get a voucher and they can take that to a private school. There's a bill now that would replace that with a kind of, what they're calling like an educational savings account, which would be basically like a debit card. And you could use it in all sorts of ways. You could like probably use it to buy educational games for your child. And so you could make some really radical decisions about not sending your child to school and then homeschooling them and then purchasing SAT prep books and educational games. And so this idea of, you know, the kinds of options and choice and notions of freedom, they're going in some pretty, pretty interesting directions in places like Florida and Arizona, a little bit worrying. But I do think some of it is kind of related to just the time we're in, you know. Obviously it's a trend that's been building, but also I think a lot of it is furthered by just people are living very different lives and are able to make different choices. Some people are able to make very different choices now. So that's definitely been occupying my mind and wondering like what the end state of that will be.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I think a lot of us would like to know how it will turn out. What are your thoughts about what will happen in the schools that you're working in the fall of 2021? So at the beginning of the next school year.
So one of the school districts I may be working in is in Florida. And so they're grappling with a lot of these kinds of issues and then potential big losses of enrollment of school children. So there's a whole question about like how that affects their operations. So I might wind up getting involved with something like that, which is what do you do when your schools start facing drops in enrollment? So that's not a very fun process, but it's interesting in terms of like, what's the right way to stage that? How do you begin to make decisions around that? And then the other work that I'll definitely be involved with is in New York City, working with three different districts on integration plans, different, and they'll be looking at different aspects of elementary and middle school planning. I don't actually know what that will look like, but it will be really interesting to see how this time has also changed perceptions, because that's work that I've been doing for a while. And so on the one hand, like there's all this stuff about choice and mobility that the pandemic has kind of introduced. And then the other thing that's hopefully been introduced is a little bit more consciousness of, you know, equity. And so, you know, maybe in the New York City context, which is, you know, tends to try and be more progressive, people will be a little bit more open to some of the things that we'll be looking at in terms of integration efforts. So that will be really interesting to see, because some of the work that I did was, you know, 4 years ago or so, and it was, you know, some successes, but hard work and trying to understand if, you know, the George Floyd's murder and the Black Lives Matter movement really picking up, whether people are able to see things a little bit differently. So that'll be really interesting to see where that goes this fall.
Yeah. What has the pandemic brought out in terms of how people are approaching, how you are approaching dealing with integration within the New York school system? Are there things that you think you've learned specifically from this experience that you'll apply to that?
Yeah, I mean, well, so a lot of the integration work that I was doing got paused because of the pandemic. So we were working in 4 districts in New York City, and about a year ago, like, that completely stopped and we didn't pick that up. So it wasn't like that's been ongoing, but we did do some, you know, work just looking at remote learning and trying to see what that meant in terms of equity issues. And so I think, you know, there is like a huge sensitivity now to like a host of other things, like, you know, like what are students' home lives like? Do they have computers at home? So there's like a whole new consciousness of equity on that front. I mean, we've definitely learned that in other projects that getting people to participate remotely, and actually we get better turnouts now than we used to, because people can call in by phone and we tailor our work. So, you know, people can use smartphones and they're not expecting to see stuff on a screen on a computer. And if we do that, we get a lot more participation from people. So that's been really interesting. I mean, I think the whole technology piece, I do think there are going to be districts where kids are going to want to keep learning remotely and parents are going to want to keep doing that. And so whether that works or not is a big question. But, you know, that I think even in some situations where, you know, there are equity concerns, like using technology, I'm not being very articulate, but we used to thinking about things as a digital divide. And what we're finding is that it's not always as much of a divide, and there's some advantages to it. And we can communicate more with people than we were able to before. And there might be some families that want to do schooling that way too, in, you know, lower, middle, upper income context. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that all plays out.
Does all of this make you, or does this change how you reflect on your own educational experience?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm not sure I've been, I went to a local elementary school and middle school, and then went as a day student to a private school in town. And, you know, I've definitely sort of for a long time, you know, I'm not sending my kids to private school and been very clear on that. You know, I think, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think I've been actively reflecting on it. I've been in touch with my high school on a number of things. And Suzanne will know partly why, because I started the summer camp at my high school, which Suzanne worked at, and that's how we met. And so I've been helping them plan, the summer camp is still running, helping them plan, you know, for virtual summer camps. And I've definitely expanded my contacts with people at the school. And I think I'm a little bit gentler on my reflections of the school than I was, like, because it, you know, it is a pretty elite place. And I think you know, my attitude now, and, you know, even in talking to them in the last year, is like trying to nudge them towards the changes that they can make, you know, that's within their frame of reference. And so, you know, trying to get them to, you know, do scholarships for local kids for the summer camp is something that I've been active doing. So I think, you know, I probably, my reflections have been less about the pandemic and more about helping them plan this camp, is just been to like, yeah, try and nudge everybody a little bit towards doing things better, as opposed to my history, which was a little bit to kind of reject and not want to interface too much with them.
What do you think about this time has made that change occur for you?
I mean, I just on a practical level, because, you know, they need to plan this program, I wound up getting involved with them. And so I think it's just sort of human contact, you know, and so you start talking to people. And in this case, like, it's like, oh gosh, you know, they need some help. And the director reached out to me. And then when you're in touch with people, you tend to like want to be more accommodating, I guess. And, you know, and find ways of like, oh, well, okay, I would like to help you. And, you know, as we're talking about how to do a virtual program, and they asked for some financial support too, I was like, well, like, let's use this as a way to broach other discussions. But yeah, I think, yeah, as a general rule, I guess, you know, you start to talk to people, you're going to develop a softer opinion, which relates back to a lot of the work that I do, which is, you know, community engagement, and like how you get people to talk to each other.
Yeah. You mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that you were recently vaccinated. And I'm curious how you think vaccination will change your work.
That's a good question. I'm not sure yet. I mean, I got vaccinated because I turned 50, and New York is allowing 50-year-olds. So I was, you know, I'm still going to work remotely for a while, and our office will. And, you know, my kids aren't vaccinated. So I'm, you know, not that I worry too much about them getting COVID, and it's an easier thing for them. I'm still a little bit wary of like exposing myself lots. But when I get my second vaccine and a couple weeks after that, I definitely feel much easier about meeting with people. That'll make a big difference. I mean, it definitely, you know, working remotely has taken a toll within the office. Just, you know, and I think I probably talked about it in one of the interviews, but just the combination of people working remotely, our office getting hit financially by, you know, the pandemic, also George Floyd's murder. There was just a whole lot swirling in our office without being able to sit down and talk to people. It was very hard time. You know, I think between sort of, you know, April, but May, especially through August, just a lot of hard conversations, not that much turnover in the office, like people weren't leaving, but just kind of a strange tension, you know, and some of it's very understandable. But definitely looking forward to like having some real human contact with people in the workplace. Definitely has had a big impact.
Can you describe some of that tension? I'm curious about it. What was it around, and how might it have been different if you were in person?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody started, well, I think on a basic level, people started to get nervous about their situations in terms of having a steady job. It's a little bit off the subject of our previous discussions, but so I think it was definitely a lot of job insecurity. And it's currency, and there's like it's hard to be 100% transparent when A, you don't really, B, you also like if things are so changeable, you don't want to like actually get people extremely worried about projects, you know, where I had five staff working on that. That was all put on pause, you know, and basically is not.
Adam?